We talked about the Psalms of orientation as a big category. They're the Psalms that people write and sing and pray when life makes sense, when they understand what's going on in the world, when there's a clear connection between good actions and good results. Psalms of disorientation are just the opposite. They express the condition or the response to bad and difficult times, experiences of hurt, alienation, suffering, even death. Life seems chaotic. Life is in painful disarray. And the question is, how do you talk to God in times like these? These Psalms are our answer. Many of these Psalms have a pretty clear structure. They'll start with an invocation, or I'm going to write the word plea, because it's a nuanced kind of invocation. You know, an invocation is asking God for an audience. That's why you'll hear, this was the easiest way to fail worship class. Believe it or not, there's a worship class in seminary. The easiest way to fail worship class, I used to love Dr. Oliver when he would call students on this. We would go through worship services a lot, and you'd be assigned a different portion of the service. And inevitably, at some point, you were going to be assigned the invocation. Your job was to stand up at the beginning of the service and give the invocation, which is this request for an audience with God. And you would always know that you had really blown it when you finished your prayer and Dr. Oliver would raise his hand in the back of the classroom and say, "There's just one problem. You forgot to invoke the deity." That is, you stood up there and said a lovely prayer, but at no point did you ask the Spirit of God to come and dwell with you. At no point did you ask God to meet with you or to hear you. That's what an invocation is. God, listen to me. Come be with us. And that's why every worship service starts with God calling you to worship, step one, and then you calling on God to meet with us as He has promised, an invocation, step two. In the Psalms of Disorientation, though, it's a nuanced kind of invocation. It's usually not a very happy one. It's usually crying out to God, "Listen to me, hear me, where are you, God?" And most of these Psalms will start with that. So I'm going to call it a plea, which is just a kind of invocation. Then these Psalms will have a complaint. Now you can really relate with these prayers, can't you? Ask for God's presence and then you start complaining. The complaint can be against yourself. "God, why do I do these things? Why can I not win this battle against sin?" The complaint can be against the enemy, the one who prowls around like a roaring lion. It can be against others in this world. Or it can be against God Himself. Frustration with what appears to be God's inaction, God's silence, or simply actions by God that we don't like very much. We make our complaint. Complaints arise out of situations of distress. If it causes you grief, if it causes you heartache, if it causes you pain, it's a situation of distress. Sometimes that's self-inflicted, right? Isn't a lot of the distress we bring upon ourselves self-inflicted? And so if we're going to go before God honestly, our complaint is really against ourselves. "God, I really don't like me. I really wish that I would be better, that I would have a closer walk with you, that I would remember the things that I know are true when I get into these difficult situations." And so those will lead to, if it's about me, it will lead to confession, right? "Cleanse me of my sin, purge me with hyssop, and I will be
clean.
But some situations of distress aren't caused by me. They're caused by others. And when you go to God in prayer with a complaint against others, that can lead to curse or what the Bible calls imprecation. Imprecation is a big fancy word. The only reason I teach it to you is because you've probably heard the term imprecatory psalm. An imprecatory psalm is a psalm of curse. It's a psalm of disorientation because it's a complaint. The evil that others have brought upon me, I want you to do something about it. And what I want you to do is to get them. Make bad stuff happen to evildoers. So that's why when we talk about Psalms of disorientation, we're not just talking about laments, which is where we'll begin, but we're also talking about these imprecatory psalms. And you can see why they would arise in this type of situation. There are also situations of distress that come not because evil that's been done against us, but because of accusations that are made against us. Maybe someone doesn't actually commit evil against you, but you are accused of things that you have not done. Isn't that the worst feeling? It's one of the things I have the most difficult time remaining patient and gracious with, is being accused of something that you know you did not do. That's aggravating. What do you do when you go to God in prayer with that? Well, you're asking for vindication. Vindicate me, O God, for these people surround me and accuse me of all sorts of things. Show them that I am right, that I am innocent, that I am blameless. So, plea, and then a complaint. A complaint can take lots of different forms, and so those are the different psalms that we'll talk about in this category. But then, the psalms of disorientation follow that complaint up with an expression of confidence. And it's specifically confidence in God's response. That God will act, that God will speak, that God will make it right. Here's the mess that exists because of sin, and yet you are God who brings salvation to His people. These Psalms of disorientation follow that progression. God, won't you listen to me? My enemies have surrounded me. I can feel the floodwaters rising up against me. And yet, I know that you will not abandon your people to Sheol. That expression of confidence comes in these psalms. And then usually, because of that, they end with praise. Therefore, I rejoice in the presence of my enemies. Why? Well, because I'm confident that even though the world seems to be falling apart around me and everybody hates me and everything's going wrong, He's still faithful and He's on the throne. And therefore, I'm going to be all right. That's the general pattern of the Psalms of disorientation. And you'll see a couple places where it breaks from that pattern. But that's the basic structure that we work through. There's an invocation, which is a plea. There's a complaint that can be for all kinds of different reasons. There's an expression of confidence. And then there's praise, blessing the name of God because of what you know that He will do. We're going to start with laments, and we'll just look at one this morning, and then we'll pick up again with laments next week. Let's look at Psalm 13.
Are they all in order, or are they interspersed?
Interspersed. They may come in bundles, so to speak. You'd have, you know, five or six of them in a row, but they're interspersed throughout.
And I'll give examples of where you can find all of these. But Psalm 13 is a very simple, straightforward one that will help us make clear the pattern here. Psalm 13. How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I take counsel in my soul and have sorrow in my heart all the day? How long shall my enemy be exalted over me? Consider and answer me, O Lord my God. Light up my eyes, lest I sleep the sleep of death. Lest my enemy say, I have prevailed over him. Lest my foes rejoice because I am shaken. But I have trusted in your steadfast love. My heart shall rejoice in your salvation. I will sing to the Lord because he has dealt bountifully with me. The writer feels, it's David of course, that God has forgotten him. And so his invocation is actually wrapped up in his complaint. Because the thing he's complaining about is that God seems to be silent, that God won't make himself known. The great expression used in the days of the Puritans calls this the dark night of the soul. Those times of Christian experience where God could not feel further away. And it's particularly true of the ones that you can't immediately explain. It's not that as if you quit praying. It's not as if you quit reading your Bible or you quit going to church. There's not some obvious thing that you can point to. Oh, well, the fact that I killed my neighbor and buried him in my backyard, that's probably why I feel far from God. It's not that. It's I have no idea where God went. I'm still here. And so the invocation, the plea is the complaint. How long, O Lord, will you forget me? He pleads to God for help. And yet, you notice there that he goes back and forth between the thing that he's struggling with and what he knows is true about God. This is the most important thing we can ever learn about the role of emotions in our lives. Many of us come from backgrounds where emotions were the most important thing. It was all about getting an emotional response and it didn't matter how you got there. But some of us may have come from backgrounds where you didn't display emotions. Emotions are off limits. We need to be logical and reasonable and straightforward. Keep a stiff upper lip. The Bible takes neither position. Emotions have to be grounded in what's true. But your emotions are real. What you experience is real. So David feels isolated and abandoned and forgotten by God. But he doesn't let that emotion drive the train. He says, wait a minute, what do I know is true about God? If I were having a good week, what would I very quickly be able to say is true about God? Well, I'd be able to talk about His salvation. In fact, I could rejoice in His salvation. Well, the fact that I had a lousy week, the fact that I'm weary and worn down, does that make God's salvation any less real? Does it make it any less true? No. So even in his lament, David reminds himself, I'll rejoice in your salvation. I don't have much else around here I can rejoice in at this moment, but I can rejoice in your salvation. That's a reasonable argument. But it's a reasonable argument that connects with the emotions that ought to make us feel a certain way. He's confident that God will respond. I have trusted in your steadfast love. He's confident that that's the winning answer, that that's the right solution because he's done it before and he's learned that it works. When you trust in the steadfast love of God, you will never be put to shame. And so he reminds himself that, because in this moment, he really needs to remember. And then he concludes with a hymn or a blessing. I will sing to the Lord because he has dealt bountifully with me. He's not trivializing his experience. This is not, as there's always someone want to say when you complain about difficulty, well, at least you're not hanging on a cross. This is not that. This is something that's actually helpful. And it's, look, things are terrible, things are awful. Your analysis of your situation is probably not wrong. I'm not asking you to pretend. But what's God's track record? Faithfulness, blessing, salvation. So let's not get carried away into despair. That's a great, great guide for dealing with individual hardship. And that's what this one is. This is an individual lament. It's David. We'll talk about community laments and other kinds of laments next week. But just as an individual, faced with situations that are legitimately bad, suffering, hurt, uncertainty, legitimately bad. The answer is not, well, at least you're not hanging on a cross. The answer is, what is God's track record in the past? And if He has demonstrated that He is able to deliver us from worse than this, it doesn't mean that this ain't so bad. It means that He's able to deliver us from this too. And that's the kind of prayer in times of difficulty that has value. If we really believe that God can do this, then we can really pray this with a clean conscience. And that's what we need, because it allows us to go to God honestly rather than pretending. God, I would have preferred that my house didn't get burned down, but you're really wise. Go to God honestly. How long, O Lord? When is this going to stop? He can handle it. But let's not get carried away. Let's remember. Let's guide our emotions faithfully by reflecting on who God is and what He's done in the past.